You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Monday the 18th of November 2019 and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, broadcasting at radioalbion.com. Well, the big news over the weekend was Prince Andrew's interview with Emily Maitlis from Newsnight. And he's getting a lot of criticism for this interview, for not showing sufficient sympathy for the victims of Jeffrey Epstein. But I think really you've got to look at this from the legal point of view. I mean, if you're the prince and you're looking at it, Jeffrey Epstein's been convicted of procuring an underage prostitute that was 17 years old. That was all he was actually convicted of. That's not actually a crime in Britain. The age of consent in Britain is 16. So I think the prince himself probably downplayed the criminal record of Jeffrey Epstein and probably didn't think that much of it when he actually went round there and spent the night round there. And when you think about it, I mean, Epstein has been accused of grooming a 17-year-old girl and forcing her to sleep with the prince. I mean, what 17-year-old girl in the world doesn't dream of sleeping with a prince? I mean, it's a bit of a ludicrous accusation. And of course, there are all these other accusations about Epstein, all these other dreadful things and pedophilia. But the specific accusation against the prince is that a 17-year-old girl was groomed to sleep with him. I mean, that doesn't make any sense. Besides that, Prince Andrew does seem to be a bit simple. He's not the brightest button. He did make a bit of a fool of himself in that interview. His excuse that he was at the Pizza Hut on that night was particularly funny, when he says that he is not used to going to places like that. Of course he's not used to going places like that. And you would think that he would have said something about that at the time. I was at the Pizza Hut when this allegation was made. He does make a good point that the picture itself looks like it could have been doctored. Does look like it was doctored. But to come out with a crazy excuse like, oh, I was unable to sweat at that time due to an adrenaline surge when I was shot at during the Falklands War, I mean, that's pretty funny as well. Bit of a daft interview, all in all. But I do think this accusation of grooming a 17-year-old to sleep with the prince is just the height of ridiculousness from this Me Too movement. I mean, most 17-year-old girls would jump at the chance of sleeping with a prince. You know, this is what girls dream of, being able to sleep with a prince. You know, they're fairy tales. The sleeping beauty is woken up by a kiss from the prince. It's ridiculous. Ridiculous. I'm sure she's made all sorts of other awful allegations. Poor woman, badly treated. But to fixate on the fact that she slept with the prince is just ridiculous, I think. Anyway, let's move on to what else has been happening. We have a report that's out today looking at the most dangerous places on Earth. And what a surprise! They all happen to be places that are infested with Negroes. And the safest places in the world all happen to be Nordic countries, with the exception of Sweden, of course, which has a very large infestation of Negroes in it. Unsurprisingly, they have all these terrorist attacks that go off in Malmo. I mean, I'm calling them terrorist attacks. They're mainly gang attacks, but they have the hallmarkings of terrorist attacks because they're using bombs. Bombs go off there. People get machine gunned. Over in Denmark now, they've had to introduce checks on the border to prevent these non-white criminals coming over from Sweden. And they've said that it's non-white criminals that are doing this. They've said that the people that they arrest in Denmark as part of these gangs for carrying out violence in Denmark, they're all immigrants. They're all foreigners. Yet in Sweden, they don't actually keep records of whether they're foreign or not. The Danes do. And they point to this as this is where the problem is. This is where the problem needs sorting out. But Sweden refuses to do it. I mean, this is mainstream news today. It's on RT. Obviously, RT is a progressive liberal station. But they do actually include the news. I mean, something like that would just get ignored on the BBC. They just won't mention it. RT does at least mention it. So I think Sweden is probably on a par with South Africa in some areas, particularly Malmo, for number of women raped. I mean, the chances of being raped in Sweden are pretty similar to the chances of being raped in Africa, I do believe now. But getting back to this official report, again, this is national news. This is actually in the Daily Mail. Libya and Somalia are the most dangerous places on Earth for 2020, according to a new map designed for travellers that alerts them to risks abroad. Libya. Wasn't Libya supposed to have been liberated from the dictator Gaddafi, and democracy was flowering in Libya from the Arab Spring, and we had David Cameron, and we had Sarkozy, Hillary Clinton, they were all over there talking about how wonderful it was that Libya finally had democracy and people could vote, and it's now the most dangerous place on Earth. 4 or 5 years later, or however many years it is, they have open slave markets in Libya. You can buy Negroes for $200 a head in the slave markets in Libya. And yet whenever you talk about slavery, people just bring up the white man as if the white man enslaved the Negro. The white man rescued the Negro from the Negro slave traders 400 years ago and brought them to America, where they were taught how to read and write. They were given clothing. They were given health care. They were looked after. They had a roof put over their heads. You know, they'd won the lottery, basically, these Africans that were taken from Africa to America. And yet they have the cheek today to complain and say that the white man enslaved them. It was the white man that freed them. It was the white man that reimbursed the slave owners for the money for them. And nobody complains about these African slavers that sold them in the first place. You know, if the Negroes want reparations, they should go back to Africa and ask the African chiefs what they did with the money that they were paid for them. So nobody really talks about modern slavery and looks at Libya, which is a central place for it. They might talk about, occasionally, they might talk about house workers that have been brought into Europe working for Arabs that have their passports taken away, but nothing about just the open markets there with Negroes in chains being sold for $200 a head in Libya. They never managed to get rid of slavery in Africa. I think Mauritania, they finally made slavery illegal in 2011, I think it is, if I remember rightly. I can remember reading a report on one of these podcasts a couple of weeks back that was talking about the slave markets and how you could buy a slave for £5 a head. And I think that was back in about 50 years ago, something like that. Maybe I'm getting the figures mixed up there. It's continually, anyway, Africa has had slavery as its main economy. Also, Libya is where these boats are heading off from, these invasion boats that come into Europe. And yet Libya is supposed to be a great triumph for the West. It's supposed to be a liberated country. It's supposed to be a democratic country now. It's not. It's a war zone, exactly as Gaddafi predicted. Somalia supposedly isn't at war anymore. Their war supposedly has finished, but they still have all these problems with piracy. But surprisingly enough, Somalian mothers that live in London are actually sending their children back to Somalia because they believe London is now more dangerous for their teenagers than Somalia is. So they're actually sending them back there. So Somalia is supposed to be the most dangerous place on earth, tied with Libya, and yet Somalian mothers in London think that it's actually safer than multicultural London. Could you get a more damning indictment of the diversity experiment? The interactive travel risk map reveals the countries where people are most likely to have trouble when it comes to road safety, security, and medical matters. And of course, they're all going to be in the third world. I mean, in some places, they don't even have a rule of driving on the left or driving on the right of the road. I mean, I'd hate to try and drive a car in a place like Delhi, for instance. The safe places have been labelled as Finland, Norway and Iceland, all Nordic countries. And also the Western countries with the least number of immigrants in them. How's that for a coincidence? Iceland, 99% white Iceland. Norway, again, a country that really doesn't have that many immigrants. And Finland, who, again, I mean, they take a big stand against immigrants. They're a very, very nationalist country, but they still don't really have that many immigrants there. They have a Somalian community, but it's still nowhere near the 15% foreigners that we have in places like England. Probably less than 5% in Finland. So Finland, Norway and Iceland are the safest countries, and they're also the whitest countries. The map has been launched by International Medical and Security Specialists, International SOS. Is that the charity that David Miliband, the brother of our once hoping to be a Prime Minister Ed Miliband, is that the charity that he heads, or is that International Rescue? I think that's International Rescue, isn't it? The same name as from Thunderbirds. Well, the map has been launched by International SOS, and Libya and Somalia both rank lowly in each of the three categories, along with Afghanistan and Venezuela, meaning they are the most dangerous. And they've also got some of the lowest IQs there. I mean, Somalia, I think, is around about 65 average IQ. Libya's got Arabs in it. Afghanistan's got Arabs in it. The Arabs have got an average IQ of 85. Venezuela, the Venezuelans, they aren't that bright. You can tell that just from looking at Maduro and hearing some of the things that he comes out with. So if you've got a low IQ country, of course it's going to be dangerous. It's going to be crime ridden. And they're also not going to be that good at medical matters, are they? They're not going to know how to heal people. They're not going to have the technology. They're not going to understand how to work the technology. I mean, Africa still has witch doctors. I mean, why would anybody want to go to any of these countries anyway? I mean, we often hear about white tourists being kidnapped in Africa, particularly in Somalia. I can't really see any white tourists wanting to go to Libya. But you do get them going to Somalia. You do get white tourists going to Afghanistan. Crazy liberals going there on a bike trip that are amazed to discover that they actually get butchered by the Muslims there, even though they came in peace. And of course, Venezuela, which is having all these uprisings at the moment. Not very safe places to go. But then, of course, you do get businesses that wish to try and set up over there. They know that they can get cheap labor there, and they know that they can get brownie points for promoting diversity and trying to help the developing world that is always still developing. It's been still developing for the last 70 years since the Second World War. It never will be developed because it has undeveloped people that live there. In contrast, Norway, Finland, and Iceland are all labelled as having a low risk of medical problems, security, and road safety issues, meaning they are the safest, along with the likes of Sweden and Greenland. Well, Sweden will have decent roads, and it will have a decent healthcare service, but I don't think you could say that Sweden is one of the most secure countries in the world, because it has no-go zones. Malmö is a no-go zone. There are tons of no-go zones in Sweden, and as I mentioned, they have bombs going off, grenades going off, police stations that are blown up, all sorts of problems happening over there in Sweden. Perhaps these figures were doctored in order to put Sweden in there. Greenland is an interesting one because Greenland, of course, is filled with Eskimos. And the Eskimos, as we have heard before in the podcasts that I did with Nat Danelaw quite a while back, these Greenland Eskimos are all a bunch of child abusers, a bunch of child abusing drunkards that rape their own children and cause all sorts of alcohol-influenced crime. So I'm surprised to see that Greenland is on there as one of the safest countries in the world. Maybe they have worked it out as in the size of the territory and the amount of crimes that are there rather than the size of the population and the number of crimes. Because, of course, Greenland is a huge, huge area. It's a huge landmass with very, very few people on it. When it comes to health, countries with the highest risk of contracting medical issues or disease include African nations, Niger, Guinea, Sierra Leone, Liberia, South Sudan, Eritrea, and the Central African Republic. One thing that the African nations do excel at is in contracting diseases and medical issues. And of course, then they bring them with them into the West. I can recall we did a program a while back talking about the number of foreigners on the NHS that were getting AIDS medication. I think it was something like 65% of the people getting AIDS medication from the NHS are actually foreigners. Yemen is also labelled as a high-risk country when it comes to health, along with Syria and North Korea. Of course, Yemen has a famine there at the moment because of the war that Saudi Arabia are waging against them. But even if they didn't have the famine, you've still got this problem of the low IQ there. Syria, I would say, well, that is because of the war, because they are the lightest skinned of the Arab nations. They probably got the highest IQ. So the problems that they've got with health over there, that is purely down to the war. And in North Korea, again, the North Koreans have a very high IQ. They are capable of maintaining civilization if you give it to them. They're not capable of developing it, but they are capable of maintaining it if you give it to them, because we can see that in South Korea. So it's probably the sanctions that have caused that country to be a bit of a risk. At the opposite end of the ranking, places with a low risk of disease are most of those in Europe, Canada, the United States, New Zealand, Australia, South Korea, and Japan. Of course, they got to put a couple of non-white countries there, and they just so happen to be the non-white countries with a very, very high average IQ. I think 1 or 2 points above the European IQ. It's looking at things like this that really starkly show the contrast between white people and non-whites and the problems that these non-whites start, basically. I mean, we've now got problems with disease in white countries, diseases that we haven't seen for 100 years. We've got a soaring crime rate. We've got stabbings, shootings, bombs going off, people getting acid thrown in their faces in the multicultural centres that we have in Britain, Sweden, France, elsewhere. And it's all the same sort of crimes that we see happening in the homelands of the non-whites. And we see these statistics that pointed out, and yet I will be accused of being a racist for saying that the reason we have these crimes in these white countries is because we've imported all these Negroes and these non-whites, and that their propensity for carrying out these crimes is so much higher than we find among Europeans. And yet the statistics are there. I don't know quite how they would interpret these, how the establishment would interpret them. They would probably say that the reason why they have all this disease and all this violence and why they can't make the roads safe is because they just haven't had enough money thrown at them. And that's the usual thing, isn't it? We just have to give them more foreign aid and then they would magically become just like us. Well, they've never been able to become just like us. And you can look back to the Egyptians 5,000 years ago and they knew what the Negroes were like. They had signs put up saying any Negro that comes past here without an owner will be executed. And that was put on the border with Nubia. The Romans never tried to civilize them. The Greeks didn't try to civilize them. The Greeks wrote about them. They said they were uncivilizable. They said the black Ethiopians, because of course there were white ones as well, they said the black Ethiopians are complete savages, uncivilizable. They grow their nails long. They make shirts out of their own hair. They grub around in the soil for worms and whatever grubs and whatever else they can eat, and they are impossible to. It says they are as far removed from humanity as it is possible to get, and that's what the Greeks thought of them. And yet today we waste all this money on trying to civilize them, trying to turn them into white people. And of course, you do get the odd exceptions to the rule, which they very proudly thrust forward to the front of the television programs as being an example of what Negroes can achieve. And of course, it's not an example of what Negroes can achieve. The average Negro can't achieve that. It's only the outliers that can achieve that. And the outliers and the ones that do have a abnormally high IQ, they always have a lot of white blood. They're never jet black Negroes. They're always the lightest skinned ones. The higher the amount of European blood that one of these non-white races has, the higher the IQ and the more intelligent they are. But of course, the problem with these non-whites is if you do get one of these outliers that's particularly bright, when they have children, they're not going to be like that because they will always revert to the mean. That's one of these things that happens with IQ. It always reverts back to the average, back to the mean. Just on a related point, there was another news story today about these two homosexual dads, in inverted commas, one of whom is now sleeping with his daughter's boyfriend. But they had IVF children, they had IVF twins, and what they did, they picked a particularly attractive Brazilian model to provide the eggs in the expectation that the twins that would come from this exceptionally attractive Brazilian model would also be exceptionally attractive. Yet she's non-white, so of course the twins that were produced from the eggs, they're not exceptionally attractive at all, they're just average Brazilians. Because when you mix the genes up like that, and when you have a mixed race person, their children are not going to look like them, because they're not natural creations, they are unnatural creations, they're mulattoes. They're crimes against nature, basically. It's a horrific thing to do to children, to deprive them of having a racial heritage, deprive them of having anybody else in the world that looks like them, deprive them of being able to have an organ transplant without rejecting it, because there's nothing else on earth that it comes close to them, not even their own family. And that's the crazy thing, not even their own family. You've got these non-white children and they're told they have a white father and they've got a black mother and they don't look like either of them. They don't look like any of their ancestors. And that inheritance has been squandered and thrown away by their white parent. You imagine what that must do to a child when they realize that. Of course, it's going to cause them to have mental problems, and I have a great deal of sympathy for them, but that doesn't mean that it should be accepted and it shouldn't be spoken about. It should be spoken about. It needs to be prevented. We racial nationalists are the ones that are actually speaking up for the rights of children, and we're trying to prevent that horrific thing being done to any more children which obviously the mainstream media and the establishment think is a wonderful thing. They think it's absolutely wonderful to have mixed race children deprived of their racial inheritance. Getting back to this article, for security, researchers evaluated the threat posed to travellers by political violence, including terrorism and insurgency, social unrest, and violent and petty crime. Countries with an extreme risk to travellers' safety include Afghanistan, Syria, Yemen, Iraq, Somalia, Libya, and parts of Nigeria. So what have we got there? We've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. 6 Muslim countries and a country which is half Christian and half Muslim. So there's a, quite clearly a link there between the religion of Islam and terrorism and a risk to travellers' safety, as well as the link that we've shown between non-whites and violence as well. Places where security risks are deemed insignificant are Norway, Greenland, Finland, Iceland, Switzerland, and Slovenia. All places that don't have a significant Muslim population. Again, there might be some Muslims in Finland, but hardly any compared to elsewhere in Europe. Probably don't even have any mosques there. The higher the number of Muslims that a country has, the more likely it is to experience Islamic extremism and terrorist attacks. Just look at France. France has the highest number of Muslims than any country in Europe. And what a surprise, it also has the highest number of terrorist attacks. When it comes to road safety, the countries besides those in Africa that pose the greatest risk, like the way it just says that besides those in Africa, we'll just take it for granted that Africa is going to be the least safe country for roads. Those that pose the greatest risk include Venezuela, Belize, the Dominican Republic, Saudi Arabia, Thailand, and Vietnam, all non-white countries. Once again, most of Europe is ranked as having a low risk, along with Japan, Australia, and New Zealand. I mean, really, they should just be looking at countries that are white and saying, are they all safe? And the countries that are predominantly non-white, and no, they are not safe. I mean, they break this up by breaking them up into different countries. But when you look at places like Australia, New Zealand, America, I mean, they're all founded by white people. They are European countries, and it's the people that are there that makes the difference, not the land that they live in or the amount of sun that they have. It's the people. The people produce the culture, and the culture will either be one that is conducive to happy living, or it will be a culture that is not conducive to happy living. And non-whites don't produce cultures that are conducive to happy living for Europeans. They may be happy with it. Africans may be happy with setting fire to their homes and killing and eating one another, but that's not the sort of culture that white people enjoy. That's not the sort of thing we want to live among. Alongside the travel risk map, the Ipsos Mori Business Resilience Trends Watch 2020 also found that 47% of business travellers expect travel risks to increase in next year. And this is down from 51% predicting a risk increase in 2019. So for some reason, less people are expecting there to be trouble in these countries next year. I wonder why that is. Is there any signs that Islamic terrorism is reducing? Is there any signs that the revolutions are beginning to slow down in South America? I don't think so. Doug Quarry, MD at International SOS, said the threats facing organizations and their workforces are impacting established and emerging economies alike. It's encouraging to see that decision makers are becoming increasingly aware of the threats of epidemics and infectious diseases. Well, if you don't build your business in the Congo, it's not going to be at risk of epidemics and infectious diseases, is it? With over $1.7 trillion expected to be invested by organizations by 2022, without taking into account human capital and productivity impacts of travel disruption, it's important that organizations get ahead of whatever potential disruption they can. With accurate information, tools, and support in place, organizations should and can plan for the anticipated risks and safeguard their investment and their people. And that's all we are suggesting our governments do with regards to the people they're importing into our countries. The accurate information is there. The fact that Negroes are 10 times more likely to end up in prison than whites, that statistic is out there. The fact that they are 35 times more likely to murder than whites are, a statistic which we find from the American records, that's out there. The statistics that show that they are less likely to do well in school, they're not able to be educated to a standard that is going to enable them to do well at university, that's there. All this information is there. The accurate information is there. So why do our governments not plan for that and anticipate the risks and safeguard their people? The way to safeguard the European people is to stop immigration and start repatriating the ones that are already here. And if our governments cared about us, they never would have brought them in the first place. I mean, all we're talking about is risk avoidance. And risk avoidance today is known as racism. And basically, it's just common sense. Anyway, thank you very much for listening. I will be back tomorrow with Mr. I. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.